From the back seat of the Hummer limousine he leased just for this episode,
it's Scott Merrick from the Venable Center for Science Outreach with
Snacks for the Brain.
No, Hummer, just kidding.
Yes, Snacks for the Brain features a chat with the amazing Dr. Charles Brow, co-inventor of the excimer laser, professor of physics, and researcher extraordinaire. We met at the fantastic Fido Coffee Hangout in Hillsborough Village here in Nashville. Check the show notes for links to Fido's and many other resources related to today's show. If after listening to this episode you don't agree that exploring the outer limits of scientific knowledge is one of the most exciting things a person can choose to do, I'd be very, very surprised. And very, very disappointed. Listen up!
We're here at Fido with Dr. Charles Brow.
Hi.
And he is a professor of physics in the Physics and Astronomy Department of Vanderbilt University and has accomplished some really interesting things over his career. One of the things that Dr. Brow does that I mentioned in the show notes page is regularly presentations of interactive video conferences at the Center for Science Outreach. We want to talk a little bit about that, and we also want to talk about Dr. Brow's invention. Let's talk about the invention first. I understand it's an
excimer. Sounds sort of diabolical.
It's an excimer laser, correct?
Yeah.
And you're the co-inventor of the excimer laser. And I've done a little research on the internet and found that, among other things, it's used in eye surgery.
Right.
And why is that?
You'd have to ask them why that is. We had no idea of that at the time we were doing the original work, of course.
So oh, cool.
That came much later. And in fact, years after the invention, I was over in Germany and got invited to the office of one of the eye surgeons who invented LASIK. And he actually did a couple of operations while I was there.
Using
a big machine that had somewhere in its depth the laser that we had invented, yeah.
Wow. So why did you invent it in the first place, I might ask? I understand a lot of science teachers listen to this, so you know, maybe you can illuminate them and in doing so illuminate their students. What caused you to pursue this?
At that time, there were no high-power lasers in the ultraviolet part of the spectrum. There were high-power infrared lasers, but not high-power ultraviolet lasers, or visible for that matter. So we were just trying to develop something that hadn't been there before.
So you saw something that wasn't and wanted to make it so.
Right. And we were delighted to have the opportunity. It took a few years to do it, with a lot of false starts and things like that. I was actually a theorist before that and became an experimenter when the ideas we were pursuing couldn't be attacked theoretically anymore. There wasn't anywhere we could go at that point. So since I was already working as a professional scientist, I got a very expensive education as an experimenter.
A little high-end OJT.
Why?
On the job training. So you were a theorist in the field of light?
Well, I'm actually atomic physics and molecular physics.
Mm-hmm.
We started this experiment and we worked for a few years, and one day we went to a conference on what were called chemical lasers, and this guy Don Setzer from Kansas, I guess, gave this paper on low pressure, what he called flowing afterglows. It's kind of variant on a neon sign. And at the end of the talk, I was kind of yawning, and nobody asked any questions. So the chair of the session was obliged, under the ethics of this kind of thing, to ask a question. And he said, could it be made to lase, this emission that he had seen? So not having ever thought of that before, the obvious answer is, well, yes. So several of us ran back to our labs, and this other fellow and I at our lab were the first to get there.
And the other fellow we should also mention, his name was?
J.J. Ewing.
And he's also at Vanderbilt?
No, this was back a long time before I came to Vanderbilt.
Way before Vanderbilt. Where were you?
At that time I was at an industrial lab,
mm-hmm,
in Boston, on the north side of Boston.
Great city.
Yeah. And then we invented that laser. We had a spectacular time for a few weeks. We had that one lased, and we actually made about three or four, I guess, excimer lasers lased. And then we were trying to make another one lased, and we got this brilliant emission, this brilliant light coming out. and we had no idea what it was. It was so bright that we said, well, let's put a couple of mirrors on. So we stuck some mirrors on there, and sure enough, it lased. And I had occasion to go off to this conference in Ohio State, and I gave a talk, and I said, we had just made this stuff lase, and we have no idea what it is, but it's a quite powerful laser. And by the time I got back, JJ had figured out what it was. It was iodine, and we had not put any iodine in the system, but some other stuff we had put in there had actually recombined to form iodine.
That's
in the midst of all this. Yeah, so we requested
that. And I got to say, I don't think I've ever heard, and you probably hear it every day, but I don't think I've ever heard the verb form of laser.
Yeah.
To laze.
Yes, acronyms have taken a life of their own now.
Wow. The acronym LASER stands for?
Light Amplification by Stimulated Emission of Radiation.
There you go. Take that to your students. Well, cool. One thing that I mentioned that Dr. Bra does is regularly interact with students, K-12, sort of all over the country, using video conference technology at the Center for Science Outreach. Do you always put on the white wig?
Actually, we teach a seminar, an honors seminar, Ginny and I do every couple of years, and one of the things we do a little science lecture while the students actually do the rest of the presentations, and I got the wig and the mustache and stuff for that, and I enjoy putting it on. It lightens the whole thing.
I don't know if you've ever heard the podcast that I did, the Snacks for the Brain 6, but it features audio from one of your video conferences.
Oh, really?
It has a picture of you in the wig, so I encourage listeners to go look for Snacks for the Brain 6 and at least take a look at that picture.
Well, it's such a fascinating topic, the idea of time.
You're doing one tomorrow, yes. Is that the 21st? I think you are.
Oh, I guess that's right.
I love to see you work just
fast,
like I do.
Doesn't it?
We were talking about the interactive video conferences that you do. Who do you talk to in those video conferences?
There were high schools not in this area, as I recall.
Probably New Jersey, New York, Texas. We get schools
from all
over the country.
Jersey sounds familiar, yeah.
Yeah. Why do you do these, taking time out of your busy research schedule to chat with students?
Well, actually, having a wife who's in charge of this whole thing.
You have the same boss that I do.
gives you one a large impetus for doing it. However, it really is kind of fun. As I say, you can, on the one hand, enjoy, you know, dressing up like Einstein and making light of the situation. On the other hand, the fact that time doesn't work the way you thought is a fascinating concept.
So that's the topic of your video conference tomorrow, is time is not exactly what you thought it was. Is that
right? Yeah.
Interesting. And you're going to use examples of news from an event reaching different places on the moon?
Oh, we begin with a green cheese eating contest on the moon that's held annually. And there are two colonies on the moon, Alpha and Beta. And the green cheese eating contest is held exactly halfway between these two cities, and the winner is announced and reaches these two cities, these two colonies, at exactly the same time. Well, we then have a bunch of Vanderbilt students heading back toward Earth. This happens during spring break. And
they've been partying on the moon.
They've been partying, and as they're sitting in their spaceship, they see the moon whizzing past them at very high speed, and they see that one of the colonies actually gets the news first because of the motion of the moon. So then there's actually some UT students who are just heading out on their spring break a week later, and they see these same events unfold in a different way. So they don't all agree on who got the news first, the colony Alpha or the colony Beta. And it turns out, as Einstein taught us, they are all right.
I love science like that.
Everybody thinks that E equals MC squared is the fundamental premise of relativity, but it's not. It's the failure of simultaneity, the fact there is no real meaning to the concept of simultaneity that is the foundation of it all.
And that's somehow, to me, oddly comforting, as an analogy. Well, cool. And you teach as well, right?
Yes. Ordinarily, I would teach one course per semester like everybody else. And this semester I have off because I doubled up my teaching load a couple of semesters ago.
Oh, that's good. What are you doing this semester?
Just focusing on the research part.
Excellent. And you like to travel as well. I know that you and Jimmy,
yes.
Dr. Shepherd, who was the focus of an earlier Snacks for the Brain, like to travel a whole lot.
Well, over the last 2 years, we've gone to Brazil, Sicily, Sardinia. This summer we're going to go to Canada biking and then to Berlin. Before that we've been to Tibet, China, Japan.
And some of these are obviously professional conferences, but you also like to take trips, as you mentioned, where you take your bikes and you do a bike tour.
We've done bike tours of the Danube in Austria.
Mm-hmm.
We've done the Loire in France in that 105 degree heat wave.
Yikes.
And this summer we're going to do Canada. We've done the wine country in California.
Well, see, there's another reason to become a scientist, ladies and gentlemen.
I would commend science to anyone if you enjoy travel. To be a scientist, you have to be comfortable not knowing what you're doing most of the time, because most of the time you're trying to figure things out, and then when you figure it out, you get on to the next thing you don't understand. But if you're comfortable with that, the travel, the colleagues that you have all over the world. I've had opportunities to go to China, and I would lecture for a week in China, and then they would send me on vacation for a week.
That's what I did in Japan. You know,
uh-huh.
It's just a fabulous trip. You know, I did a 2-hour gig at a workshop for teachers and spent a week touring Japan.
Yeah.
So teachers even get a piece of that, folks.
Well, they deserve it. Wow. The most important reason I do it is because I love it. I've always loved it. I was the nerd probably in grade school. Probably I was born a nerd. Still am a nerd, but now I'm comfortable being a nerd.
It's
hip
to be a nerd, though.
Yeah, you're right. Yes.
That's the whole
We've
geek
come
thing.
Into our own.
It's okay to be a geek.
But it's an opportunity to get paid for what I just love to do anyway. So I'm having a grand old time.
That's it for today's Snacks for the Brain, episode 26. As always, check the show notes page at snacksforthebrain.blogspot.com for all kinds of other stuff. You're missing it if you're not checking out that blog site. Also, check the website at www.vanderbilt.edu/CSO for all kinds of wonderful things the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach is doing to help K-12 students and scientists connect worldwide. Thanks to Dr. Burrell, thanks to Fido, and thanks be to you for listening to Snacks for the Brain!
Music for today's pod show provided by the Podsafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Check that out.
See ya!